In a world where poetry rules, there was one man named Simon Parson. He was first on the open mic, and it was awesome.
One second, let's try and find what I was intending to read. Okay, this is called Unconditional Love, which is two poems that work together as one. Ideally, I should have sorted someone out to read the other poem, but there we go. Waking every morning, loving a little more. The road is dug up and cordoned off. Despite the problems hard to bear, new conduits laid, traffic peaks, the quirks you're forced to share, new asphalt over holes, glaring deficiencies cracked by temperature, new wounds, new scars. Perhaps there will be change. Signs worn slow, staggering the flow. If none comes and things remain the same, changing the route's course. Celebrate the joy of all we share at the cost of the public purse. Bared to the quick, pared back, a stale and tarnished view. Identify actions that led to despair, become again fresh and new. Let new shoots flourish after prunings attack. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Simon. And now we have Stanley Nash.
We have to restore race, that's recently on the MC said. In the future, every poet will have an iPhone, so thought, why not? Anyway, this is a poem that I wrote a few years ago. It was written for my therapist after I had run from dealing with depression, but it's a little bit hopeful, so no need for anyone to panic just yet. It's ran. When all light is extinguished and dark swirls like a storm and the black hole is calling, remember me. When all you feel is vacant and all you hear is muffled, when you're weightless and pointless and dead weight and useless, remember me. For I am the answer and I am always here somewhere, holding your hand, offering solace, patiently loving everything about you. For I am hope and I burn eternally. Thank you.
Standing. Next time I'm feeling crap, I remember you. Hey. And I'm sure I feel old. Oh, I don't know about that, Melrose, if you be careful. Then we have Donald Maloney. I'm going to read a short excerpt from the short story I've been reading over the last few weeks. It's kind of halfway through the story and it's an interlude. I'm not sure if I'm going to leave it in or cut it out, but it's a kind of a separate piece. But I'll read a piece of this interlude. Let's do a thought experiment. Imagine a group of eminent music experts has been assembled to determine, by reasoning alone, the happiest piece of music ever written. To make sure they don't draw on empirical knowledge, the panel members have their memories temporarily erased of all knowledge of actual pieces of music. How this is achieved is unimportant, but let's say they put on nail polish made of magic shellac. In addition, they forget everything they knew about specific composers and songwriters and their biographies for the duration of the experiment. However, their understanding of general principles, whether musicological, historical, or sociological, remains intact. To illustrate, after their memories are zapped, they won't remember what Beethoven's Eroica Symphony sounds like, or who he was, but they will still understand everything they did about, say, sonata form, the defining features of marches, and the radical expansion of the symphony's possibilities in the early years of the 19th century. The panel is asked to describe what features a supremely happy piece of music would most likely possess, and what era and type of person might have given birth to it. The hope is that the description will approximate to a real piece of music. The panel will be given one limitation to respect. The happy piece of music they describe must also have lasting aesthetic value, i.e., measured against all other music from all times. After going to the trouble of designing the experiment, nobody wants the result to be a recording of babies laughing over a background of rhythmic hand clapping and kazoo solos. Consideration is to be given to music everywhere, written at any time and in any genre. However, let's say I've just seen the panel of eight shuffle into the committee room and take their seats at the oak table, and that several of them were wearing tweed and corduroy, although one of them had glasses, none of them had healthy looking skin, four of them had severely pinched faces, three of them had domed foreheads, two of the men had scruffy beards, and two of the women had hair you could hide a manuscript in. Discussion begins, and the first thing the panel agrees on is that happiness implies duration. Indeed, it is what distinguishes it from joy, and that the winning piece of music should sustain its happy mood over a long period. The panel look very pleased. Not only has the scope of their task shrunk to a fraction of its size, but they have managed to exclude the three-minute pop song in all its diversity, along with huge swathes of folk music and jazz. How sharp and indifferent the blade of reason is. How swiftly it chops and discards when there are no empirical facts to restrain it. One of the bearded men leans back in his chair and lights a cigar, and because it's a thought experiment, we let him. I'll leave it there.
Ladies and gentlemen, and Mary O'Connor, you can keep walking. There she comes, the one and only. Well, after the wonderful elegiac reading by John, Donald's talk about happiness, and I hope that I have my happiness poem with me. It one second. Where is it? Sorry about this, folks. I wasn't in my usual place. Of course, it's the one that stayed in the envelope. Well, Maureen Gaffney is very much in the news talking about how to be happy and all of that. So this came to me a while back, actually, but maybe now is a good time to trot it out. It's called Poetry, Please. If you're feeling lost or lonely, maybe fighting off the blues, someone's thought of a solution. I just heard it on the news. All those self-help books you paid for, or else borrowed on the sly, are considered less than useless by some academic guy. Maureen Gaffney's book of wisdom has been flying off the shelves, as so many wish to flourish and express their inner selves. But the latest innovation that some scientists revealed is that poetry has powers that are hitherto concealed. A recipe to raise the mood, a challenge for the mind, would be reading or reciting poems, the best that you can find. Mix in sonnets, haiku, ballads. All you need is half a cup. Leave them browning in the oven. When they're done, just take them up. When you focus your attention to unravel cryptic lines, it triggers countless neurons to fire off at different times. Sample Eliot, or Heaney, Ezra Pound, or Sylvia Plath. The effect becomes electric, and your brain gets charged by that. Becomes flooded with endorphins as your dwindling hopes revive. Reading poetry is the answer. Makes it worthwhile staying alive. And now we have Max Creedon.
Stasi, because of your influence, right? So Stasi sounds up. I think we all have enough of that film, The Lives of Others, and very well sanitized. But having up the Stasi Museum, I still have it in my head, so I got it out this way. I've seen the first few lines to get in the Berlin mood. Crying eyes appeal, they smile behind their dark disguise. Secret eyes revealed, stacked in boxes and archive. Boom, boom. So that's that part. And then the vans and lofts, the men, lovers, women, brothers. Children coached to sneer a silent reproach. Reports are due and swoops and sue. Private little tittle tattles, isolated caterwaul. Negative influences, church going confluences. Oblivious of port wall tracking, in scoops they follow. Realign, scope again, no smooth flow from this slideshow. Children of a revolution need a hearing, activists and clearings, snatched by skinny, sinister vans, false panels and boxy dimensions, filed, processed, locked away, enemy of the state declensions, brutal and abrupt. In the Kafkaesque dreaming pillow man, suffocate him. Now stacked and mounted in crates, shelves, and postboxes. All there, the maimed, the mentally strained. Few broke though, some collateral damage. All thrive again in a new emergence of plugged, empty holes. They don't really like Berlin. Filled by shabby honeycombs. 380s office blocks and homes paid for by Bavarians. And where's the beauty? All those schlosses, side-footed. Checkpoint counterpointed as a wall falls. One last anointing for the anointed ones as sentry boxes are abandoned, disembodied in their fatherland. Prying eyes concealed. Now new watchers revealed. By Snowden revealed. Cyberspace is a longer reach. So who's watching who now in the fatherland? So that was the first step of this evening, so good to get that.
Thank you, Rose. This is the expert for my novel on the quest for lost era, and I'll just start it. As I say, all good things come to an end, so it was with the excavation of Ballybastard and all the interactions that happened therein. It was convenient for some who decided to return into college and not save or not being stuck in the boiling rain for the winter. But for many, it consisted of just another episode of moving on self and belongings to anywhere at the mercy of the various archaeological companies. In the quest for information, the site looked like a bomb hit it, with or without Sam and his missing machine. What was obvious to the naked eye was this. The site was broadly circular, with a subterranean running through the centre, now with pits and stone-lined drains and a defensive entrance in the southwest, and reinforced stone cladding outside the perimeter of the ditch. Oh, and anybody forget to mention human skeleton, while it was there, for a start. Nobody knew, in the sense that most of the crew knew less about the site than it was when they started. So naturally, employment, past, present, and future was on everyone's lips. John, where are you coming after this, inquired Greg? Back to college with us two. At least we're not going to die of frostbite. Alison had the same question for Wheeler. And you're not going to find any further work, she said. But I suppose sex keep us busy. Oh, sorry, do you mean excavation work? You're supposedly working in Navin for 2 weeks, I don't know who with. Has Canute Enterprise got anything else? Not to my knowledge. I suppose they walk up the north, although for how long I don't know, and with whom I don't know either, concluded the wheeler with his heavy stride and drawing a cigarette. Why about when the instant local barge decided asking for a grand tour? Actually, I have an idea. Do you, Greg? Inquired Eklund. How about having tours at set times? €5 per person, with discounts on children, classes, and the elderly. I just guide them across the way. No strain on the actual sites themselves. Perfect, now all I have to do is put up notices in town. Officially that's my job, Greg, but if you're thinking of men to the public, go ahead. I'll go on to commute enterprise about that and you can sort of get that thing later. This is catered for everybody, for anybody who wants to be, see the site. The council, interest, locals, you know, everyone. The guys Canute can say no, can they? Wouldn't put anything past those guys, at least the guys from the council. It's a good idea, considering, and a productive one at that. Greg's guided tours. I like your initiative. Now where's Sheila? I have to get some books off her and get some decent finance information on Barry. Thank you.
Fantastic, Trish. And just to let you know that Trish will be launching that book Saturday week, isn't it?
Saturday week, yeah.
July 12th in the library at 2 o'clock?
Yeah, 3 p.m., yes.
Yeah, so put that in your diaries if you're going to be in Cork. So the next reader up is a very enjoyable speaker, Ciarán McCarthy.
Thanks a lot. This is called A Founding Father. I sent my son to school in the hope that he'd be smarter than his phone. They taught him all the rules and how to calculate the interest on his loan. Made dull tools of shining jewels and straightened his wayward hairline with a comb. And when he threw his hat, they handed him his own rope and stone. My daughter was a dancer, flowed to the feel of her own groove. But as she took a forward step, the floor beneath her feet began to move. The makers of the melody told her body what to do. The male voice made demands and asked her what else is new. My wife is gagged and chained by the pretty things the TV has to say. Her feet are free to follow as the silver screen illuminates the way to a rolling paradise where your better self will learn to play. I love you tomorrow, but I'm not so sure how I feel about today. I'm a warm-hearted man, but my body feels cold. And I have earned my stripes because I did what I was told. A well-instructed life, and now my children's children call me old. I paid the right price, flag bearer into a deeper hole.
Keep it up, Ciarán. We've plenty to say. Next up, we have Sandra McShane, is it?
Yeah.
Sandra McShane.
Okay, I'm actually going to sing a song.
Hey.
Oh.
Hey.
I don't know, I was going to sing one song and then I decided I was going to sing a different song and then I can't remember which.
J'en serai des tout solo pour ces quinze. Then upon high, when they told you, so do they tell you when to breathe in and breathe out.
Sorry, Clara, hold on.
I play the pipe in the piccolo, I don't play follow the leader. Upon the boat, there are kicking notes and I'm staring out the window. Billy rides with the devil's hand. They told him he was evil. Sister Cat had a leather strap. She smacked him till he was bleeding. No fair down, you stuck in, you don't even know. The world let that child grow up in is gonna be a different world. And when you're killing imagination, your math is no longer war. They made you kneel and say a Hail Marys. They taught you to be a fool. They blame you to the bunk in school. They just don't wanna go. I play the pipe in the piccolo. I don't play part of the leader. Up on the boat, there are taking notes and I'm staring out the window. And all the crooks in your history books, I just don't want to know. No paradigm you're stuck in, you don't even know. The world let the child grow up in, it's gonna be a different world. When you're killing imagination, your myth is no longer war. They made you kneel and say a Hail Marys. They taught you to be a fool. Can't blame the youths if the bunk in school. They just don't want to go.
We're probably just to hear you sing again, so nice one. And now, hard act to follow, Niall Harris.
Indeed, a hard act to follow. And sorry, but this is more death. It was very moving to hear you talk about your parents. This is about Dermot Healy, the writer who died yesterday. I knew him through workshops when I lived in Mayo, and I just jotted down a few notes. I was hoping for a poem, but I didn't get a poem yet. Dermot, well, when I was trying to get back into creative writing, I had been writing when I was much younger, and most of my writing was very technical and boring, you know, for most of my life. But Dermot helped me get back into creative writing. Myself and a number of other people at the workshops, we're all storytellers, really. So he said, find a theme. Find a theme to connect your stories. Find your voice. Find passion in your writing. Tall order, but we keep on trucking. a few thoughts about Dermot and writing. Whether Dermot was Ireland's greatest writer, as Ronnie Doyle said, presumably he meant of the recent batch, or not, he certainly shook up Irish writing. Michael Harding calls his writing subversive and unruly. Indeed, that was also Dermot's character. He was very unpredictable. You never knew what outrageous thing he'd say, especially after a couple of pints in the backroom Belmullet bar at a workshop. He could cause shock and embarrassment, or mirth, hilarity, amongst the participants. His love of nature, I remember being, it was beautifully expressed in something he was writing, and I heard it on the radio as well, about the barnacle geese flying over his cottage, sea battered cottage in Sligo, right on the shore, flying back from Iceland, having gone from Ireland and back from Iceland to feed on the green grassy banks of the rivers. If you've read his poems, you know why some people compare him to Kavanagh. His nature poems, anyway. He had an unexpected way of putting sentences together, which I think is very Joycean. All the time he emphasized the subversiveness of words and what they could do. And he had a disdain for the overplotted formulaic novels so beloved by our mainstream publishing houses. No wonder he never won a major award. But his great spirit lives on. He died too young at 66. He feel he had a lot more to contribute in his plays, his poetry, novels, and short stories. So Dermot, may you enjoy whatever is there on the other side. No better man to do so. Thanks.
Thank you, Niall, well said. And now we have finally, and last but not least, Cedric.
Well, it's kind of a response to Michael, though John kind of hit home in a very Twitter way. Anyway, this one is called Tokens. God is not compassionate. Join in the fun or don't. It won't matter, you will pay in full. God is mean and playful. Many have tried and succeeded, setting up places and groups of faith, becoming shameless, firm, bright. You have not been forgotten. Actually, you are constantly reminded, until you, your brothers and sisters, all are one and finally bonded. The rules are simple. Lose sight of the end and meet it. Or play safe, stay poor, and meet it. What is karma if you lose all anyway? Only a restriction allowing justice. Rigging the game, cancelling the game, leaving us to become him, yet just us. There are all reasons you won't understand for which we are here. Among them, to know about love and fear. You will struggle and flee, fight and kill, delight, threaten, protect and thrill. It's not for you yet it is for you in him is all that is. In life there is no profit worth making without a matching lesson worth learning. God is a growing child, always eating. Nothing else matters. When hungry, he will be feeding. He is waiting for you, for your return. As by essence, you can only be late. He is a capricious child. God is not compassionate.